I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 and 1280 The Zone. Let's talk a little Jazz basketball. Let's get out to the Smart Rain special guest line. Joining us now, of course, my co-host for Jazz Pre-Half and Post, longtime coach along the Wasatch Front. He's our friend Tim Lacombe. What's going on, Tim?
Long time.
I don't know. I want to rattle off your resume, you know, we'd be here all day if I did that. But, you know, I just...
Long time underachiever. What else can we throw on my name?
Switching it up and talking some Utah Jazz basketball. It sounds like by all reports, Royce O'Neal is back and healthy with the Jazz. He was at practice 2 days ago. He's going to be back again today, I would imagine. And is probably back in the starting lineup tomorrow in place of Joe Ingles. Was the Jazz offensive performance, which had been their two best offensive performances in their last two games, both wins, due to Joe Ingles being in the starting lineup? Was it the quality of the opponent they were playing on the road? What do you chalk that up to?
Man, I almost think... probably a combination of a lot of factors, but I think more than anything, I think they all kind of got right after that loss to the Pelicans. You know, talk about a season being a journey, and this is a very talented team. I mean, over the last 2 weeks, the number one offense in the league at a crazy number, offensive rating of 122. So certainly guys out there in every spot that can affect the game positively. The key is figuring out how to do it together. And I feel like that's where the steps were taken. Like the game, you know, against Portland was such a blowout, and Portland was so bad. But I take from that that the Jazz still attacked it and played the way they know is going to be kind of the, you know, based on ball movement, predicated on defensive intensity, ability to rebound and run. I think they found a way to, you know, in confidence again in winning that way. I'm really intrigued to know what you think, Ben, on, because Jake and I have talked about it, but I'm intrigued to know what you think about Joe starting or coming off the bench. I know it's been kicked around the last couple of days, but I do believe Joe has a little more comfort level. I just don't know how you manage, you know, ball handling off the bench, because I know Joe kind of brings that when he comes in. But I'd be curious what you think about the whole starting thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think my argument for Joe being better is he's playing with better players. And, you know, you play with better guys, you're going to look good. And he's particularly designed, his skill set is designed well to benefit from having better guys around him, whether it's shooters, right, whether it's better rollers. And Hassan Whiteside's a better roller than, or I should say, Rudy Gobert's a better roller than Hassan Whiteside is. And he's also a better help side defender, so he covers up some of the mistakes that Joe makes on that side of the ball. So I think that's a lot of why Joe Ingles looks better, but it's why you know, played him in important minutes in the playoffs last year, even when Mike Conley was healthy in that first round. So I think that's why Joe Ingles is so good, and I think it's a good wrinkle to know you have the ability to go to. And it's not terribly unlike Manu Ginobili not starting for the Spurs, where he was the better player, but yes, the value he brought and kind of increased everybody else off the bench had its own value in itself.
Yeah, I feel that way, and I think Royce obviously has got a really defined role on this team, and really to go out there and guard the toughest guy, you know, have that assignment, kind of have to do that from the start. So, you know, I don't feel one way or another about it. I think it's just an interesting observation that Joe has to, there seems to be a little bit more comfortable. But you make a great point. I think because A, the spacing's probably a little better, and, you know, and he's getting a little bit more space too because guys are hugging. Whereas when Royce, you know, that guy's always kind of off and giving help where he can. So just an interesting kind of scheme situation going on there.
Seems like the ball movement in the last couple of games has really benefited Donovan Mitchell. And Donovan, you know, went through some bumps and skids. He won a game for him, taking it over in the fourth quarter, but at times, you know, didn't put up the numbers maybe he was looking for. But then these last couple of games, as the ball movement is there, Donovan's numbers have been great. Why does that style of play seem to benefit him so much?
I just think that's what, you know, he has the ability to do all those things. He can facilitate, like Ben said, Joe does really well, but he does that really well often too. And I think it serves Donovan well, because if he is a multifaceted guy who can shoot it, drive it, pass it, it just makes him a more difficult guard. I think early in the season, part of the issue with ball movement is guys weren't making shots. So I think it was almost like, well, you know, I'm just going to go get this done again. Quinn alluded after a game the last week that, you know, that this offense has to be predicated on ball movement. That when they go out there and hold the ball, when the ball sticks, it just slows everything down. So I think almost Donovan has had a rebirth to that effect. I know he had 7 assists the other night, and is such an effective passer. But that coupled with his ability to score, you know, is really kind of what sets him apart. He's more than just a one-trick pony. And I think as Donovan continues down that road, I think it's going to be easier for everybody else as well. You know, I think the Jazz got into a little bit of a funk, too much dribble into shots. And I feel like that's kind of been rectified over the last couple games.
You touched on it a little bit earlier in this conversation about how Friday night's loss actually might have been a bit of a good wake-up call for the Jazz, because you lost at home to the Pelicans when you had absolutely no business losing to a team, right? Even though back-to-back home games in the same town against the same team is just ridiculously goofy. But the Jazz have kind of historically, you look back, they've had some of these runs before after a bad loss. Last year, you remember, even though we didn't know at the time, I think it was game 8, we didn't know how good the Knicks were. The Jazz got blown out by the Nets on the road. And then the next night, I think, had a 15-point lead or something over the Knicks, and then let that go, ended up losing by 12 points on the road by giving up a huge fourth quarter to Austin Rivers. I do feel like maybe that could be a galvanizing loss for the Jazz against New Orleans, even though their road's going to get tough. Cleveland's playing well. Minnesota's playing well. Philadelphia has Joel Embiid back, and we know the Wizards are one of the best teams in the East. It does feel like maybe that will light a fire, at least try and get the Jazz to focus, because it seemed like so many of their problems this year have been just lack of focus issues.
I totally agree, Ben. I think, you know, and I don't know, for me, it was almost like that game against the Pelicans, whether it lit a fire or just kind of reinforced everything that they already know. I think that was the telling thing. After that game, you know, the post game got really, really interesting, because, you know, some of the curtains came down, and, you know, Quinn talked about how they have to play to be successful, and then each guy came in and added their little piece to that. And I told Jake then that it's interesting, after a game like that, the fact that everybody's A, on the same page, and B, really kind of talking about the way they have to play to be successful, like, that's half the battle. That's more than half the battle. It's that whole buy-in piece, and teams go in and out of that. You're never going to have a team that's fully functional all the time. So there's going to be times where guys, you know, they don't feel like playing that way tonight, and that gets contagious. But I think the more reinforcement you can have when you have games like that, things just don't click. You lose games you shouldn't. I think it just brings everybody right back to the mark. Like, hey, we can be special, but we got to be special in our way. You know, our defense is built around Rudy corralling and keeping him as close to the middle of the floor as possible. He's impacting way more shots this year. And then again, offensively, really talented dudes. But don't forget that the beauty to the Jazz offense is that the ball beats the defense when it's passed, and as opposed to dribbling. And that's where they kind of got in a rut. But that, to me, is what really the positive out of that loss was. And I could see a springboard of just a reinforcement of what you said, Ben, focus.
Who's the favorite in the West right now?
I would have to say Phoenix, the way they're playing, right? I mean, you ask me, they've rattled off, what have they rattled off, 15 or 16 straight?
I think it's 17 now, yeah.
17 straight?
Yep.
So, And I just, you know, my affinity for Chris Paul and what he does, and I think Devin Booker's a bona fide scoring god, you know. I just like the way those guys play, their cohesion. But the Jazz are right there, and Golden State certainly is in the conversation with Steph and Draymond and their experience, and I think they're having a great year. But I think those three teams right now, the teams I talk about, I certainly wouldn't bring the Lakers up right now.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. Let me bring the Lakers up right now.
Okay.
After the top three, the Jazz are playing, you know, 666% basketball, or, you know, 66%. They're 14-7. Everyone else is basically 500. Mavs are 11-9. Grizzlies are 11-10. Lakers are 12-11. And then you do have Clippers, Blazers, T-Wolves, Nuggets. They're all also within a game of 500. So Mavericks, Grizzlies, Lakers, Clippers, Blazers, Timberwolves, Nuggets. Which of those teams could be in the conversation for being a top three team in the West if they aren't there, even though they're not there right now?
That's a good question. I probably would throw, and I know Denver's not playing terrific right now, but I just love what Jokic can do, and particularly in a playoff series, you know, where he could get crazy hot. Man, they miss Murray, though. You know, the Clippers are hanging out there. They're just kind of doing their thing. And I'm not huge on the Clippers, like, long-term, but they certainly are freaky scary. Probably out of that group, though, the team I would pick is probably, just because of consistency and Luka, is the Mavericks being possibly, they don't play great defense, but a team that could possibly kind of hang out in that upper echelon. Because I feel like it's kind of their time, you know, time for them to do something like that. But to me, it's wide open. I certainly don't think it's going to be the Trailblazers.
No.
That is the worst defensive effort I've seen in some time.
Real quick, Coach, your thoughts on Boston, the game we've got tomorrow night?
Boston's a great town. Spent 2 years of my life there. Interesting, you know, they're going through a whole new situation with Brad Stevens kind of taking the reins and turning coaching duties over. You know, they're kind of trying to find their way right now, but I really like this place in the Jazz are in to have all this time off. I can only speak for myself. I feel like I've gone to Bali for 3 days. It's been unbelievably great to have the time off. I think that'll really benefit the Jazz. It'll be a fun game, but I think the Jazz should be able to handle Boston pretty easily.
Tim, thanks, buddy. You're the best. We'll see you tomorrow.
Awesome. Talk to you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Coach.
That's Coach Tim McComb, Jazz pre-half and post-game analyst.
I don't blame anyone, especially Jazz fans, for being frustrated with the start to the season, and because it hasn't felt easy, which has been kind of the common theme. And it's why I've talked about why I like Joe Ingles in the starting lineup. It's felt easy when Joe's been out there. But man, who's had an easy season this year? I mean, Phoenix and Golden State. And just about everyone else has had a brutally miserable season. Nets are 15-6, but they only beat bad teams. They have not beat the good teams on their schedule. They got blown out by the Nets. Like, when they play good teams, they lose. The Wizards have been one of the most enjoyable stories. They're second in the East right now at 14-8, but does anyone take Washington seriously?
That's not real.
No.
Yeah.
Bulls, maybe, but I don't think they're really going to be able to hang on as it goes. Milwaukee's won 8 in a row, and they're 6 games over 500. I mean, they have a worse record than the Jazz, and they've won 8 straight, meaning they were 2 games under 500 before this started. The Heat are beat up. Bam Adebayo's out for the next, you know, 2 months right now with the thumb injury. Cavs have been a fun story, but they're 2 games over 500. And that's just the East. You look at the West. Yeah, the Mavericks were like, they are entering Luka's prime. And I get that he's not, you know, he's like 22, 23, but he's one of the best players ever. Those guys enter their prime at an earlier point in their life than other players do because he's so smart. His game is not predicated on his athleticism and where it goes when he turns 32 or 33 years old. You've got a decade with this guy as a top five player in the NBA, and they're 2 games over 500, and they're 4-6 in their last 10. The Grizzlies were expecting this big breakout from Ja Morant this year, and he was all NBA in the preseason, and he was great. We saw him here. They beat the Jazz. They're 1 game over 500. Lakers were trying to get back to being a championship team. 1 game over 500. Clippers aren't going to have Kawhi this year. Trailblazers are nonsensically bad. Timberwolves, they're on it. They've arrived. They're 11-11. It's like no one's having a good season this year. The Nuggets thought they were going to win a championship. Coming off of Nikola Jokic's MVP year, they're a game under 500. Michael Porter Jr.'s out for the rest of the year. PJ Dozier's out for the rest of the year. Jamal Murray's not going to come back at 100% this year. Just the Pelicans?
Enough said.
I get it. I, don't only feel good because your neighbor's having a worse life than you are.
But nobody got better in the offseason. In fact, it looked like everybody got worse.
Right. And yeah, in fact, I think Rudy Gay was really one of the biggest additions in the offseason for any of these Western Conference teams. I think you can credit the Suns going out and getting JaVale McGee because he's helped that second unit. And they're playing well, and I think you got to wonder if they're peaking too early or if they're just so much better than anyone else in the NBA, they'll run away with the championship, and that's certainly possible. But, it's easy to get focused on with the things the Jazz have not done easily or well this season. But, man, nobody really is playing great.
Quickly on Dallas, how do you surround him with that team?
Yeah, he's I've always said this, the same thing about LeBron James, and they're kind of similar. Because here's the hard part about LeBron. Here's the hard part about Luka. Whatever you're best at, he's better than you. Like, you can be the best passer in the NBA and go play with Luka, and Luka's a better passer than you are. You can be a great scorer. Devin Booker. Luka's a better scorer than Devin Booker's. He may not average more points, but he's a better player. He's better at that one thing if he just wanted to focus on that than you are. So it's easy to win with these guys. LeBron, Luka. It's hard to play with them. That's always been my theory. It's why you've never had these like incredible second stars for LeBron. And, Kyrie helped him win a championship, and Dwayne was incredible, and Chris Bosh was incredible. But it's never felt like a true, true big three. I mean, Anthony Davis had a really good year a couple of years ago, but even then he's kind of waned. He's really kind of fallen off. I think it's hard to play next to some of these guys who are so impactful everywhere because it doesn't give you the spots to shine where you want to shine. So it's really difficult to build around a guy like Luka Doncic.
I get it. That's why I think it's a grand experiment of can you give somebody the ball the whole game and actually win a championship? Because that's what Houston
James
tried
Harden
to do.
James Harden's really hard to build around.
Hey, that's what Dallas is trying to do.
Yep.
LeBron was good enough. Part of the reason is because LeBron played both sides of the ball. But I certainly get what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's hard to be LeBron's teammate because he's the one pulling the strings. He's the one with the ball in his hand. He's the best player on the team.
And Steph Curry has certainly shaken up this theory as well as anyone has. I still, for the most part, you can look back at NBA history and say, like, it's really hard to have the best player on your team be shorter than 6'6".
Yes, that's a physical thing with Steph Curry. I totally agree with that.
Like, and what he did that was different was he stretched the floor up to 35 feet, which nobody had done before, and then the rest of the league has caught up to that.
Kind of.
Never as good as he has.
Right.
But they're like, well, we got to guard you at 35 feet, and we have to have players who can defend in space now behind that, and nobody had that for 5 years, and the Warriors ran away with so many championships.
There's still, what, two players in the league that when they pull up from 35 feet, you respect it. Everybody
Correct.
Else you just laugh at.
Correct. And it only works for one of them.
Yeah. It's Damian Lillard.
Like, no one cares if Damian pulls up for 35. Right. It's cool. You've done it. I saw you beat the Thunder doing it.
I mean, we've seen LeBron do it. But the truth is, whoever's guarding LeBron is laughing because
right.
when LeBron is doing that, what he's not doing is
right.
dunking over you.
Correct.
Right.
So, yes, I agree with you. Steph is the one guy who's thrown, he's the exception to the rule. But I still really strongly believe that your best player needs to be 6'6 or bigger.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.